Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear The Man Called X with Herbert Marshall. But right now, Dana Andrews stars as Matt Savetic in I Was a Communist for the FBI. This syndicated broadcast first heard on January 18, 1953, called Against the Middle.
I Was a Communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews in an exciting tale of danger and espionage, I Was a Communist for the FBI. Many of the incidents in the story you're about to hear are based on the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic.
9 years isn't a long time to the average American living a normal life. But a communist for the FBI doesn't live a normal life. And 9 years of fear and tension seems an eternity. The fear isn't all personal. The greatest fear is that those you're trying to protect will fail to recognize their danger. Refuse to realize that communists are dedicated to the elimination of personal liberty wherever it exists. If you are one of those who has refused to believe, listen to my story with an open mind. It should open your eyes because it's part of the story of communism.
In a moment, listen to Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man.
I'm walking my tightrope again, crossing the chasm between communism and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I've just come from a cell meeting where I've received instructions in the gentle art of starting a riot. And I'm getting cleaned up before going out to meet my FBI contact, but I'm interrupted by a knock at the door. I'll be with you in a second. Oh, come in.
You seem surprised to see me, Comrade Svetik.
I am, Comrade Horton. I was about to go out.
And we got here just in time.
Yeah.
This is Comrade Carlescu, Comrade Svetik.
How do you do?
It is my pleasure, Comrade.
Comrade Carlescu has just arrived from Europe. He's on a special assignment in which you will cooperate, Comrade Svetik.
What is the assignment?
To begin with, Comrade Svetik, since you are to accompany me to Chicago, leaving immediately would be well for you to pack while I outline our mission.
I don't see how I can leave immediately, Comrade.
What?
Well, I have some unfinished party business I need to look after.
Well, it will have to wait, Comrade Svetik.
Well, now, look.
I should have told you, Comrade Svetik. Comrade Carlescu is high in the ranks of the European MVD. Now, according to the directive I received from New York, his orders are to be followed without question.
Oh, I didn't understand.
Thank you, Comrade Horton. You can go now.
Thanks.
Now, Comrade Svetik, if you will proceed with your packing, I will proceed with my outline of our mission.
All right. What about our mission, Comrade Carlescu?
Well, unbelievable as it may seem, Comrade Svetik, dangerous reactionaries are still operating in one of the newest People's Republics. A group in this country is supplying the funds being used against us in that People's Republic.
There isn't much we can do about that, is there?
Not against those in this country. However, once we know the names of those in Europe, we can end the movement overnight.
And you're here to get the names of these European anti-communists from their friends in this country?
That is our mission, Comrade Svetik.
Well, just how are we supposed to do this?
Through operatives we have managed to plant in the European organization, we have learned that the group leader in this country is a Dr. Zorny, who lives in Chicago. Now, I have a letter of introduction to the doctor from Vladimir Brodnik, one of their most trusted European workers, who happens to be one of our operatives.
I see.
Now, we will have the fullest cooperation of the local party members, Comrade, the best protection they can give us. But I am warning you, this is a dangerous operation. If we are clumsy and get caught, Dr. Zorny and his group will unquestionably eliminate us, as we intend eliminating their stooges in Europe.
That sounds reasonable. But why mention it?
Because I do not want to depend on a comrade who may weaken under stress. If you are afraid, say so. I will get someone else.
I'll go.
I thought you would. We better go to the airport.
A I don't want any part of this assignment, but I have to take it. Because if I don't, someone else will. And the lives of some of our anti-communist friends behind the Iron Curtain are at stake. On the way to the airport, I try to get away from Carlescu long enough to phone the FBI. But there's no chance. There's no chance when we get off our plane in Chicago either. Because local party members are waiting for us to drive us to an apartment house where they give us a briefing.
Unfortunately, comrades, we cannot give you too much information about Dr. Zorni's group or its activity.
He operates a bookstore, specializing in technical works, and his whole establishment is exceptionally well guarded.
Guarded how?
In the daytime, Comrade Carlescu, the store is filled with customers, browsing among the books.
The same customers each day.
And at night, the place is protected by burglar alarms, with direct connections to the precinct police station.
This has to be an infiltration job, all right.
And even that is far from certain of favorable results, Comrade Zvedek. One of our own cell members joined Dr. Zorni's group a month ago and failed to get any information.
He didn't learn anything?
We don't know. We only know that he was taken into the group 4 weeks ago. Haven't seen him since. Mm. Dr. Zorni blandly denies ever having heard of him. Well, that's about all we can tell you.
Then take us to the bookstore. Comrade Svetik and I have a job to do.
As we drive from the apartment to Dr. Zorni's neighborhood, I can't keep my mind off the party member who joined Zorni's group and disappeared without a trace. And I can feel my blood pressure pounding in my temples as our car comes to a stop.
Well, comrades, this is as close to Zorni's bookstore as we can take you, without endangering your mission and your lives.
We've both been to the store inquiring about our missing comrade. If they saw you with us, they...
Now, where is the bookstore from here?
The next street over, Comrade Carlescu. Turn to your right.
It's in the middle of the block. You can't miss it.
Come on, Comrade Svetik. We will find out how my letter of introduction works.
This is the place, all right, Comrade.
Do not call me Comrade. I am plain Joe Carlescu, and I will call you Matt.
Okay, Joe.
Come on. I'll go right to the back of the store, Matt. It should attract attention.
Okay. I hope it's the sort of attention we want. Now what?
Look as though you wanted some help.
That won't be necessary. By the time you turn around, it'll be here.
May I help you, gentlemen?
We'd like to speak to Dr. Zorni.
I am Dr. Zorni, sir.
I'm afraid we need a little more identification than that.
Oh? Mr. Barton?
Yes, doctor?
Please come here.
What is it, Dr. Zorni?
These gentlemen would like to have me identified.
I'm satisfied, Dr. Zorni. Are you Joe?
I guess so.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Joe Carlescu. I have just arrived from Europe with a message from Vladimir Brodnik. I do not want to talk here.
It is perfectly safe. Every man in the store is a trusted friend.
Oh, well, in that case...
However, it is not very comfortable. I have living quarters in the back. We will go there. This way, please, gentlemen. Now, if you please, Mr. Carlescu, the message from Brodnik.
Okay, here.
Brodnik speaks highly of your work in the underground, Mr. Carlescu. What can I do for you?
No, as I see it, Doctor, the question is, what can I do for you?
What do you mean, sir?
I, together with my friend, Mr. Svetik, want to join your group of patriots here in the United States and continue the work I was doing before I was driven out of Europe.
I see. Brodnik's letter does not mention Mr. Svetik.
No, Brodnik did not know him. He is my cousin.
We'd never seen each other until Joe arrived a short time ago. When he told me what was actually happening in Europe, I gave up my job to come to Chicago with him.
You sound like the sort of man we need badly.
When do we start, and what do we do?
I admire your spirit, Mr. Svetik, but I am afraid it is not that simple. I will have to take up this matter with the council.
How long will that take?
Not long. Several of those you saw browsing in the store are members of the council.
Is it safe to have so many members of the group in a place where local communists can identify them, Dr. Zorni?
Quite safe, Mr. Carlescu. Every one of those men has lost all of his relatives who are living behind the Iron Curtain. So they're men with a purpose and immune to coercion.
Uh-huh.
As for their personal safety, like myself, They all have permits which allow them to carry guns.
I see.
Now, please, make yourselves at home while I poll the council on your request.
After Dr. Zorni left, the minutes dragged by interminably. And although Carlescu and I were unable to discover their observation post, we knew we were being watched every second for any suspicious move. Finally, when even Carlescu began to fidget as his nerves responded to the silent pressure, Dr. Zorni returned to the room, accompanied by the man he had introduced as Mr. Barton.
Gentlemen, your request has been presented to the council.
And did they accept us?
The answer to that, Mr. Carlescu, is yes and no.
What does that mean, Dr. Zorni?
Exactly what it sounds like, Mr. Svetik. You are being accepted as probationers in the movement.
Well, that's a step in the right direction. When do we report?
You have already reported, Mr. Svetik.
Huh?
For a time, until the council has clearly established your identities and your purpose in coming here. You must live here with me and expect suspicion.
Well, look, we came here as volunteers. If this is
Matt,
the way you...
Dr. Zorni is right.
What?
Matt does not understand the precautions necessary in underground movements, Doctor.
In America, only communists have need for such knowledge, Mr. Carlescu. Mr. Svetik's ignorance is a fine reference.
Well, can't we leave the house at any time? For any reason, Doctor?
Of course you can, Mr. Svetik. But when you do, Mr. Barton must go with you. The lives of our friends in Europe depend upon our vigilance.
I see. Any other restrictions?
Only one. Communists have already tried to infiltrate our organization. Until the council is absolutely certain of your motives, gentlemen, I must ask you to surrender the revolvers that so obviously bulge your coats.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Well, I would rather not, Dr. Zorni.
I am afraid I must insist, Mr. Carlescu. If you will direct your attention to Mr. Barton, you can see that he has you covered, and the council members are just outside the door.
Dana Andrews, starring as Matt Svetik, in I Was a Communist for the FBI, and the second act of our story.
Mr. Barton has you covered, and the council members are just outside the door. That's all Dr. Zorni says, and he says that quietly without any melodramatics. But Comrade Carlescu and I know that we've had the word. And we give up our guns without any argument, then wait to see what happens. As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing. For two nerve-wracking days, I sit idly by while Carlescu is questioned about things that have happened behind the Iron Curtain. Apparently, he passes the test.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Dr. Zorni.
What's good about it, Doctor? I'm getting a little tired sitting in a back room looking at the walls.
Still impatient, huh, Mr. Svetik?
Well, I didn't give up my job to follow Joe out here just to sit around twiddling my thumbs.
Of course you didn't. By the way, what was this job you gave up, Mr. Svetik?
Why, with an insurance company. I was a claim adjuster.
What company, Mr. Svetik?
Valley Center Mutual. Why?
Just routine. Now, although we have not yet had any direct word from Vladimir Brodnik, the council members are reasonably well satisfied with Mr. Kalescu's response to their questioning.
Well, that at least is gratifying, Dr. Zorni.
Now, if you are still willing to accept group responsibilities and risks, we have a task for you.
What's the job, Doctor?
I have an important meeting this afternoon, a meeting at which no communist spies are desired.
Just how does this affect us, Doctor?
Very directly, Mr. Svetik. Two communists known to the group members have been taking an undue interest in the bookstore for the past few days. Your job will be to keep them occupied, leading them away from the vicinity, if possible, while I get away to keep my appointment.
Oh, I see.
Normally, I would send Mr. Barton with you for protection, but I need Mr. Barton myself this afternoon.
Well, give us back our guns, and we won't need any other protection.
We don't want any gunplay, Mr. Svetik.
We won't start any, Doctor. But if these Reds are as tough as you say they are, I don't want them to trail me away from this bookstore unless I have a gun.
I can see your point. Your guns will be returned to you, but remember, if there is any shooting except in unquestionable defense of your lives, we will turn you over to the police.
There will be no shooting, Dr. Zorny. I am sure that Mr. Svetik and I can handle any Communist Party members without violence.
I feel quite certain that you can, Mr. Kalescu. By this evening, we will know the answer.
That sounded like an expression of confidence from Dr. Zorny. And Carlescu and I congratulated ourselves on the way we'd fooled our enemies. Secretly signaling our comrades watching the bookstore to follow us, we led them to a place where we could talk. And we were unpleasantly surprised by their reaction.
If Zorny was headed for an important meeting, you had no right to lead us away from the bookstore, comrades.
Why, this comes very close to deliberate sabotage. We'll have to report it.
Go ahead, comrades. And I will report you as a couple of thickheads who should be returned to the menial positions in which you obviously belong.
Comrade Carlescu is in charge of this operation, comrades. His orders are to be followed without question.
But Dr. Zorny...
Zorny has been going to meetings for months without your learning anything. Our leading you away from the bookstore will gain us the confidence of the group.
Are you making any progress, comrade?
At least thanks to Comrade Sertik's insistence, they have returned our revolvers.
But not our ammunition.
What?
Check your gun.
You're right, comrade.
When Zorny said probation, he certainly meant it.
What caliber revolver do you carry, comrade?
.38 police special.
Give us your cartridges.
I only have those in the gun.
You can get others. We can't. Give them to us. It's an order. Good. Now, were you able to learn anything at all while I was being questioned, Comrade Svetik?
I overheard Zorny asking Barton about a list of names.
Names of the group's members?
I don't know. Zorny referred to it as a new list. Barton said he hadn't seen it.
We are going back to the bookstore at once.
We just got out of there.
And we are going back while Dr. Zorny and Mr. Barton are out. With them gone, we should be able to check the living quarters thoroughly.
This may be a trap, Comrade Carlescu.
A trap?
Zorny and his group may have sent you out while they prepared an unpleasant surprise for your return.
It's a possibility, Comrade.
Yeah. Are there any suggestions?
Yes. Why not send Comrade Svetik back first to spring the trap if there is one?
That's a happy thought.
It would spare you for future party assignments, Comrade Carlescu.
That is true. You are not always thick-headed, Comrade.
I try to think of the party's best interest. Please remember that in your report, too, Comrade.
I shall. What do you think of the idea, Comrade Svetik?
I'm on an assignment. You tell me what to do, I'll do it.
I am accepting the suggestion. You return to the bookstore immediately. I will follow you in half hour. If everything is all right, stand in the doorway under the pretext of looking for me, and I will join you.
What happens if there is something wrong?
I will praise you highly in my report, Comrade Svetik.
I don't like the idea of being a possible clay pigeon for Dr. Zorny's group, but I console myself with the thought that this does give me a chance to contact the FBI. Then I learn that this isn't much consolation after all.
Sorry, Matt. We can't officially interfere in this matter.
Why not?
Political reasons. Kolesky is traveling on a diplomatic passport. No matter what our sympathies may be, we can't take sides unless someone breaks the laws of the United States. But naturally, if anything happens to you...
Well, thanks. Kolesky has already promised to praise me in his report. I'll have quite an obituary.
I know what you're up against, Matt, but in this case, I can't give you any help or even protection.
Any advice?
None that'll be of much help. Just try to stay out of trouble. If you can't, make as much noise as possible. I'll tip off the precinct police to keep a check on the bookstore.
After hanging up, I return to the bookstore. Everything seems friendly enough, so I stand in the doorway as a signal to Carlescu, and he joins me. Then we walk directly to the living quarters and back. The council members are all smiles as we pass between them when I walk through the store. But as the door closes behind us, we hear the lock click.
What was that?
Only the lock on the door, Mr. Kalescu.
Dr. Zorny,
You seem surprised to see me, Mr. Kalescu.
As a matter of fact, we are, Doctor. No one told us you had returned.
Did you have trouble?
No violence, Doctor, but after all, communists are not fooled.
That is a matter of opinion, Mr. Kalescu.
Was your meeting successful, Doctor?
Very enlightening, Mr. Svetik. I will give you the details later. You did say you were a very close friend of Vladimir Brodnik. Did you not, Mr. Kalescu?
Like brothers, Dr. Zornik. Have you heard from him again?
Indirectly. And since the council is about to make its final decision concerning you two, I wanted to be sure of my facts.
I am at your disposal, Doctor.
I feel quite certain of that, Mr. Kalescu. Now, if you two will make yourselves comfortable, I will join the council. I am sorry you knew Brodnik so well, Mr. Kalescu.
What could he have meant by that?
I wish I knew. It didn't sound good.
No. Did they take your gun away from you?
No.
Then give it to me. Our time may have run out.
Well, if it has, I want a gun.
There is no time for argument. Give me your gun. Now, I will guard the door while you go through Zorni's papers. Look for the list of names we want. The names of the European underground.
So, while Carmen Kolescu stands guard at the door, I ransack Dr. Zorni's desk. But I find no names. The voluminous correspondence carries only code signatures.
Sorry, comrade. There must be a list of names somewhere. No man could remember everyone in the underground.
Then I make two startling discoveries. I find a notebook containing the underground's table of organization with all the names and corresponding code signatures. And I find a two-page letter which reads in part, "The names attached are those of MVD spies who have been recently eliminated. Beware of anyone who contacts you giving any of these men as underground references." And at the top of the second page, I see the name of Vladimir Brodnik, the name Kalescu used as reference when we first met Dr. Zorni. Suddenly it occurs to me, by throwing away the letter and giving Kalescu the list, I can protect the lives of the European underground workers.
Well, haven't you found any names yet, comrade?
I just found a few.
Good. Give them... No, put them in your pocket. I hear someone coming.
Then get ready to make a break for it, comrade.
Why, did you get all the names?
I got one list, and there's a letter that warns against... Here they come.
Right through them.
Yeah.
Kalescu.
Yeah.
Oh, we won't get out of here, right? Look out.
Are you all right, Comrade Kalescu?
I'm alive. And what happened to you, Comrade Svetik?
Nothing much. I followed right behind you. You took most of the swings aimed at me.
We were watching the bookstore, Comrade Kalescu.
Yes. If we hadn't been there, you would have disappeared without a trace.
Yes. Comrade Svetik.
Yes?
The list of names you put in your pocket. Do you still have it?
Yes. There are only a few.
Well, it's a start. It will convince the hierarchy that Comrade Kalescu accomplishes his missions.
Well, it won't do Comrade Brodnik much good.
Why not?
His name is at the top of the list.
Let me see that list. It is at the top of the list. Wait till I get back to Europe with this. I always suspected Brodnik.
This may not be the list we're looking for, Comrade Kalescu.
It is the list I was looking for, Comrade Svetik. The list that will eliminate Comrade Brodnik and the rest of the traitorous swine.
That was Kalescu, another typical red idealist, the type whose party zeal is always conditioned by suspicion of everyone. And the suspicion reacted against Kalescu, as I learned from party repercussions after he returned to Europe. His charges against Brodnik, who had died a party hero at the hands of the underground, was officially interpreted as an attempt to cover his own failure. And he disappeared. It's a lonely life being a communist, but when you can't depend on friends and can't afford enemies, you're forced to walk alone. Not as yet been forced to an underground movement. It could happen here, And it will if we ever forget that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. To protect innocent persons, the names, dates, and places mentioned are fictitious. But the danger we warn against is very real. Many of these stories are based on the fantastic experiences of Matt Svetik. Next week, we'll bring you another strange adventure. Join us, won't you?
I Was a Communist for the FBI on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from January 18, 1953. That broadcast, released by Ziv Syndication and directed by Henry Hayward, who also directed most if not all of the episodes of the Humphrey Bogart Lauren Bacall series from the same syndicator, Bold Venture, in 1951. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X in the CBS broadcast from August 15th, 1948.
Presents Herbert Marshall as the man called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, and all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find the man called X. And now Frigidaire presents Herbert Marshall as Ken Thurston, the man called X. Ken Thurston first saw the girl in the lobby of a New York building in which the offices of the Bureau were located. She was pleading with the elevator starter, pleading in a dazed, frightened manner.
The man who is known as X, I must speak with him. It is about Maggiore, you understand? Per favore, please, I must speak with him. I must!
A few minutes later, the girl sits quietly, a little frightened, in a private office at the Bureau as Ken talks to her sympathetically.
So you want to talk with this man called X?
See, the man who is X. You know him, Signor.
I think I can help you find him, if you'll help me. Now, suppose you stop by telling me your name.
My name, Signor?
Yes, that's right.
But I do not know my name. That is strange, is it not? I do not know my own name.
Oh, it's not important. It'll come to you. Do you remember why you came here to see him?
But I have told you, Signor. It is about Maggiore. You understand, Signor? About Maggiore.
Maggiore?
No, you do not understand. But this man who is X, he will know. See, he must know.
Of course, but when we see him, you must tell me where you're from, what is troubling you.
But I cannot do this, Signor. I do not remember. I can remember nothing. Only that I must see the man called X. About Maggiore. Please, per favore, take me to him, Signor. He must help me. Please.
Yes, I'll take you to him. First, you'll rest a bit. Now, here, come with me. Come this way. Miss Brooks, will you see that the signorina rests comfortably for a half hour or so? And get in touch with Dr. Bowman at the hospital. I want her placed in his care.
Certainly, Mr. Thurston. Here, you come with me, dear. Now, everything will be all right. Everything will be fine.
Grazie.
Did you get it on the dictograph, Chief?
Yes, I got it, Ken. An amnesia case, eh?
Sounds like it.
Think it might be a fake?
Dr. Beaumont will tell us. Mind if I use your office phone, Chief?
No, go right ahead.
Hello, Westman. Thurston. The Spartivento sailed from Naples last week en route to New York. The Maggiore art collection was aboard.
The Maggiore art collection, of course.
Then I'll check on it and see where it is now, will you? Thanks.
So you think the girl was talking about the Maggiore collection, eh, Ken?
Could be. What do you know about the collection, Chief?
Well, let's see. It's world famous, looted by the Nazis, recently recovered, and it's coming over here for some kind of public exhibition, isn't it?
That's right. It's going to tour the country. Proceeds going to a rehabilitation fund for Italian war orphans.
Yeah, but if that's what the girl was talking about, why should she look for you? The Bureau hasn't any interest in an art collection.
I think we have, Chief.
Huh?
That collection means a new life for thousands of Italian kids. A chance to dig themselves out of the mess the war left them in.
Well, sure, Ken,
but I... That's why the collection is our responsibility. We've got to see that those kids get that chance. That they grow up as the next generation's decent citizens. And not its stormtroopers. Thurston here. Oh, yes, Thurston. Yeah. I see. Thanks. Sparta Vento docked out of this morning, Chief. The Maggiore collection went through customs about an hour ago.
And what do you want us to do, Ken?
Chief, the truck taking the collection to the Norris Art Gallery was hijacked. The guard and driver killed. And the paintings are gone.
Going anyways, Mr. Thurston?
Well, I'm not sure you want to go, Pagon, but the chief thought you might do a little job for the Bureau.
Mr. X, that's out. Definitely, positively out. I don't want no jobs for the Bureau.
That's what I thought. Well, can I drop you anywhere before I get to the Norris Art Gallery?
The Norris Art Gallery? Well, that's where the Maggiore collection is.
That's where it was going to be before it was stolen.
Stolen? But that thing's worth $10 million.
Yeah. I'll drop you at this corner, Pagon.
10 million simoleons. Should be a pretty good reward for getting that stuff back, eh?
Oh, the insurance company will pay off pretty well, sure. But as long as you're not interested.
Why should we be so hasty, Mr. X? Naturally, I don't want a job, but I'll be glad to help you out, yeah. Just for old lang time, you understand. And $20 a day in expenses, of course.
Now, Pagon?
Oh, sure. It's a cinch. While you talk to the manager, I make like a big shot art expert.
Good. There's the gallery. Let's go in.
There's the office, Mr. Thurston. It says Muriel Bowen, manager.
Yeah. Okay, Pagon. I'll see you back at the car.
You understand, Miss Bowen, that I consider the loss of the Maggiore collection to be the result of unforgivable negligence on your part.
I'm not particularly interested in your thoughts on the subject, Mr. Cameron.
Well, as manager of this gallery, you should be. The dividing line between unforgivable and criminal negligence may be a very narrow one. Good day, Miss Bowen. Pardon me, please.
Certainly, yes, sir. May I come in, Miss Bowen?
Why not? You're practically in now.
Thanks.
Did you enjoy your little eavesdrop?
Sorry, I didn't mean to move in on a private conversation. That was J.B. Cameron, wasn't it? One of the sponsors of the Maggiore collection?
I'm sure that Mr. Cameron and I don't know nearly as much about you.
Oh, my name's Ken Thurston. I'm interested in the collection, too.
How nice. An official interest?
Let's put it this way. There's a good deal of money tied up in it, but it'll be lost if it's not recovered.
Only an insurance man would be interested in the money involved.
I gather that Cameron seemed to think that you might be.
What else have you gathered, Mr. Thurston?
Only that you're the manager of the gallery and that your name is Muriel Bowen.
I'm 28, single, and I've been here ever since I left art school 6 years ago. And I know absolutely nothing about the robbery. Does that help you?
It might, if I could rely on that information.
You will have to decide that for yourself, Mr. Thurston.
Miss Cruz, senor. That is a problem with which perhaps I may assist you.
Oh?
I am Luca Rosselli, senor. Representing the Italian organization which sent the Maggiore collection over here.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Rosselli.
Signor Rosselli is also a carbon copy of J.B. Cameron in a way, Mr. Thurston. Go ahead, Luca. Tell the man how dishonest I am.
Oh, I do not say that, signorina. I accuse no one of anything. I know only that it is of vital import that those paintings be recovered.
You sound like an art lover.
Art? I know nothing of art. I'm here to collect revenue for displaying those paintings. Money that is needed badly in Italy for the war orphans.
Well, at least someone here realizes that those children will suffer the real loss.
You're a very unusual insurance man, Mr. Thurston, placing the interests of Italian orphans above that of your company.
This is a very unusual case, Miss Bowen.
Yes, I know. You see, the real insurance man was here 15 minutes ago. That makes your interest in this matter most unusual.
Pagon. What luck did you have?
Can always depend on a salesman. You know that Cameron guy?
What about him?
He thinks I'm a big shot art collector. You know, he's a collector himself. Specializes in Da Vinci painting.
What's so important about that?
Well, maybe I can pick up a bit of change. After all, I've got a friend who paints Da Vinci's even better than Da Vinci.
I think you can make a better deal with Cameron.
I can? How?
Find the Maggiore collection for him. That's got two genuine Da Vinci's in it.
Up call for me to come here to the hospital.
They're going to get some answers from that little Italian girl.
Oh, and she was faking amnesia.
No. Beaumont's given her an extensive examination. She's undergone traumatic shock with loss of memory.
Yes, but where does the connection with the Maggiore robbery come in?
Chief, I'm convinced that girl's mind holds the key to it. We've got to unlock it.
But if she's got amnesia...
Beaumont's going to try sodium pentothal.
Sodium pentothal? The stuff the army psychiatrists use for battle fatigue.
Yeah. This girl has what amounts to the same thing. Some horrible shock has blocked her mind. But Beaumont's going to get her now. And within a few hours, we should have the answers to everything. Oh, hello, Beaumont. All set to go.
I'm afraid not, Thurston.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
Well, I went to get that girl a little while ago. Her room was empty.
Empty? Well, how'd she get out?
I don't know. I ordered a search. It's failed to turn her up. I'm sorry, Thurston, but that girl's disappeared.
Continue with Frigidaire's Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall. The Maggiore art collection has been stolen. Thousands of Italian war orphans will be without rehabilitation unless it's recovered. And the girl who didn't remember, whose mind holds the key to the mystery, has disappeared. Now, an hour later at the Bureau office, Ken is talking to one of the Bureau's agents over the phone.
Yeah, keep the knowledge gallery covered, Esmond. I want to report on everything that Muriel Bowen and Luca Vasselli do. Right. Call me back when you have anything. Oh, hello, Chief. Anything new?
Not a thing, Ken. The girl seems to have dropped off the face of the earth.
We've got to find her, Chief, before it's too late.
Ken, are you sure we're not kicking up a big cloud of dust over nothing? Those paintings are bound to show up when they're offered for sale.
They'll never be sold on the open market. There are collectors who will buy them purely for personal satisfaction.
Yes? Oh, for you, Ken.
Thanks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Thurston. This is Muriel Bowen.
Yeah, I recognize your voice.
How flattering.
How did you get this number?
A delightful friend of yours, the art collector. I believe his name is Zell Schmidt.
I might have known.
Well, don't feel too badly about it, Mr. Thurston. You see, you don't have to bother about the Maggiore collection anymore.
Well, why not?
Because it was just returned to the gallery not 5 minutes ago.
Trying to get into the gallery, Mr. Thurston. Nobody's home.
What are you doing here, Pagon?
Oh, I just came back to get Mr. Cameron's address. I got a painting to sell him. A brand new Da Vinci. Strictly a part of my job for the Bureau, you understand.
Yeah, well, forget about it. Your job's over.
Huh?
The Maggiore print paintings have been returned. They're in the gallery now.
Oh, no, they're not.
What do you mean?
Oh, I was just inside there. By accident, the key I just happened to have in my pocket fitted the back door. And I know a Bellini or Da Vinci when I see one. And I didn't see one.
Let's get to that rear door.
Sure. It's right down in the back of this driveway. There it is, Mr. Thurston. Right where that big truck is parked.
Yeah, let's take a look at that truck.
So it's a truck, so what?
A closed panel job. With a few bullet holes in it.
Bullet holes? Mr. X.
Yeah. This is the truck that was hijacked.
Hey, then maybe the paintings are still in there. Well, Mr. X, are they?
No, but something else is.
Huh? What?
A bureau agent named Esman. With a bullet in his head.
Thurston.
May I come in, Muriel?
Why, of course, Mr. Thurston. I'm honored.
Thanks.
I suppose you stopped by about that telephone call.
An explanation might help.
It was merely a stupid mistake. One of the attendants told me the truck had been returned. I misunderstood, thinking he meant the paintings. I called you before I checked.
Yeah, that could happen to anyone.
You should have told me you were going to drop in. I'd have had the apartment more presentable.
Or you wouldn't have been here at all.
Why, Mr. Thurston, how can you say such things?
Those suitcases and half-packed clothes said them first.
Ah, the evil finger of suspicion. It moves, it writes, and still spells my name.
Why not try erasing it?
Never erase a line once drawn seeking perfection. The line may be improved, but the soul of art destroyed. My art teacher taught me that once.
Art school, the Matisse and Picasso on your wall. Painting means a lot to you, doesn't it, Muriel?
Ah, you've uncovered my scarlet secret, Mr. Thurston. Yes, means almost everything. My job at the Norris Gallery. I wonder if you can understand how I feel about it. As though it were a sort of trust.
I can understand that.
And can you understand how I felt when the Maggiore collection was stolen? The collection I was responsible for.
You can't run away from responsibility, Muriel.
There's no law that says a person is a criminal because he can't face his own conscience.
But there is a law against kidnapping.
Kidnapping?
That nurse's uniform on the Devonport. Too bad you didn't get it packed before I came in. Where's the girl, Muriel? In the bedroom?
Yes, Ken. Yes, she is.
Think of it, Mr. Cameron. Where else could you pick up such a bargain? A genuine Da Vinci. And for only, shall we say, $5,000?
That is quite a bargain, Mr. Zellschmidt. Why let it go so reasonably?
You hit the nail on the hammer, Mr. Cameron. Yeah, you know how it is when you need some ready cash.
Or need to get rid of a stolen painting.
Stolen? But I swear by the father of my father, Mr. Cameron.
What about that, Rosselli? Is this Da Vinci part of the Maggiore collection?
Signor Cameron, that painting was never in any collection.
You're so right, Signor Rosselli. It was passed down in my family. From hand to mouth, you understand.
Your pardon, Mr. Cameron. There's a Mr. Ken Thurston to see you.
Oh, no.
Show him in, please, William.
Yes, sir. This way, please, Mr. Thurston.
Thank you. Hope you don't mind my barging in. Are you right, Mr. Cameron?
No, not at all, Mr. Thurston. You're the insurance man Rosselli was telling me about, aren't you?
I'd like to talk to you about the collection.
Oh, yes, of course. Rosselli dropped in for the same reason. Frankly, we got nowhere, and we're just amusing ourselves listening to a sales talk about this Da Vinci copy.
Copy?
Any fool would know that, Zellschmidt. Well, look at the necklace on the portrait. The links in several places are not even joined. Now, do you think that Da Vinci would ever make a mistake like that?
But
the copy is bound to look pretty shabby compared to the paintings you have here, Cameron.
Yes. They are pretty fine, aren't they?
Yes, that Franz Hals, for instance. One of the best I've ever seen.
I practically had to kidnap the owner in Amsterdam to keep the Frick collection from getting it.
And that coral, I don't think he's ever had a finer feeling for the haze of twilight than in that one.
No. No, it cost me $10,000 more than I wanted to pay. Old man Carpenter was bidding against me. But I got it.
Oh, senores, please. This is all very interesting, but we should be discussing the Maggiore collection. Art is not as important at this time as those children in Italy.
You're right, Signor Vaselli. And I've good news for you. We found a young girl, an amnesia case, who apparently knows all about it.
Why, that's wonderful, Thurston. But if she has amnesia, how can she tell you anything?
She's going under sodium pentothal at the hospital tonight. I think she's going to tell us all we need to know.
Shock. Bring it out in the open. You're here because the man called X is the one thing she's clinging to. So when she talks directly to you, answer her. But when we reach the point where the trauma began, I'll take over and reconstruct the situation with her.
I understand.
Good. I'll ask her if she can hear you.
Can you hear me, Signorina? This is the man called X. Can you hear me?
I can hear, Signor X.
You were looking for me, Signorina?
See, I was looking for you. Friends.
Friends of yours told you about me?
Children. Naples. You helped them.
Ask her why she needed help.
Why did you need help, Signorina?
It is about Maggiore. About Maggiore.
The Maggiore art collection?
See, the paintings. I've come for the children. Nothing can happen. Nothing. You must help.
Help with what? What help did you need? Where?
The boat. The boat from Naples. They told me. Help them. They told me.
You're aboard the boat, Signorina. You understand? Aboard the boat.
No! No!
Aboard the boat sailing from Naples to the United States.
No!
Aboard the boat with the Maggiore art collection.
No! You cannot do it!
Why can't I do it?
The children! Nothing can happen to them! Nothing!
What do I care about the children? What do they mean to me?
How can you say that? You of all people! How can you say that?
Those children mean nothing to me. Only those paintings matter.
I do not believe you. No! After the war, what we've been through together. You cannot steal it. You cannot.
I'm going to steal it. Do you hear me? I'm going to. You can't stop me.
No, I will not let you. I will not let you.
What do you care whether I steal those paintings or not?
How can you say that? How can you?
What does it matter to you? Why do you care?
Why do I care? Are we not?
Why do you care? Why do you care?
How can you say that? Luca, mio fratello. Luca, my own brother. How can you say that?
Bravo, sir. So the secret's out at last.
Keep quiet, you fool. You'll endanger the patient's welfare.
Do not endanger your own welfare by any foolish moves, doctor.
Luca, mio fratello. My own brother. Stealing.
It's all right, Nina. It's all right. There's nothing to be afraid of. Quiet now. Everything's all right. Just rest.
No, do not move either, Thurston. I will not hesitate to use this gun.
I know, Roselli. Just like you used it on Espen when he caught you driving the truck back to the gallery to throw suspicion on Muriel.
Now, see. It is unfortunate that you discovered my sister. Otherwise, you would have suspected only Signorina Bowen.
No, Roselli, you gave yourself away by trying too hard to convince me you knew nothing about art and were only concerned about money for the children. But you slipped when you told Pagan why his copy of Da Vinci was a fake. No amateur would have noticed. Muriel suspected you, too.
Signorina Boyne?
Yes. That's why she tried to get Nina out of town. She was afraid you'd find her and kill her to keep her from talking. And you would have, too, wouldn't you, Rosselli?
She's a fool, Signor. Why should I not kill her?
Sure. What's a little murder compared to money? Esmond, your sister, thousands of kids in Italy whose future depends on those paintings. Well, you're not going to get away with it, Rosselli.
Oh, brave words, Signor Thurst. But words will not stop me from pulling this trigger and disposing of all of you.
I figured that. Okay, Chief, turn on the lights.
You bet, Ken.
All those men.
What? Chief? He's going to shoot.
Nice going, Ken. Trap worked out perfectly. That's all the proof we need. Except one thing. He didn't tell us where the paintings are.
I think we'll find them at Cameron's, Chief.
Cameron?
Yeah. In some secret gallery where he can sit and gloat over them. They didn't represent art to him any more than they did to Rosselli. To one, possession. The other, money.
And it's all over, eh, Ken?
No, Chief, it's just beginning. For some thousands of kids in Italy. You know, those kids are like a blank canvas. And we're the painters. What we put into that canvas will determine its future. Maybe a masterpiece whose effect will be felt for generations. Maybe a worthless smear that will wind up in the junk pile of the world. I wonder which it's going to be.
The Man Called X on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from August 15, 1948. And that wraps up The Seller of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. It's been a pleasure.